And you don't have to have good grammar. You don't have to spell correctly. It doesn't have to make sense. Just write, record. In fact, I encourage people to not try to make sense of it when you record it. What you're actually doing, you're collecting data. And we all are in a process. We're in a process of a journey together, and we're trying to pick up information which will help us to get to where our final destination. Sometimes we'll take a shortcut and we'll go to school and we'll go to the library. But all those are sources of gathering information. But the true source of information or processing information should be with yourself, I believe. And this is why I use the saying, the adage from the late Dr. Howard Thurman, a mystic theologian, walk in the path which falls on your path. And so you may use others as a model or paradigm or as a guide, but as Miles Davis said, he had to play a long time before he began to play like himself. And we just gather stuff until we finally figure out how to play like ourselves. And that's the whole point. You have to be in the driver's seat. This is a place where you take spiritual challenges and risks, and particular confessions. And we mentioned that it's important to be as specific in confessions as we can be. The general confessions that we make in church are helpful, but for every confession, general confession that you make, you receive a general blessing from God. For every specific confession that we can to make, then we'll receive a specific blessing or healing power from God. So it's very helpful to be as specific as we can. And this J-Car thing is something that after reviewing my journals for over a period of time, I discovered that basically I record confessions, I record affirmations, and places of recreation, which I also call play. And I think, and obviously there's some other areas, but in order to give it, one of the things I like to do is I like to try to make some order. And when I first started a journal, I didn't have any sense of order. Somebody said, write. And I wrote, but I wrote it on a piece of paper, and then I lost it. And it was probably the most insightful entries I've ever had. And it was one of those ESP entries. But I lost it. And what I find that I like to do is to write stuff down and try to sort it out later. As I mentioned, in our confessions, we discover we have a lot of garbage. And we deal with our own garbage, we deal with our own confessions. We don't fool around with confessing other people's sins, although we're very tempted to do that. But we make our own confessions. And it's like our garbage, whatever it happens to be. And what you do is like the garble routine here. Have any of you done the garble thing? It's fun. I mean, it's very instructive. You really should do it if you have a chance as a volunteer. You really have to sort through all that stuff and put it in some type of order. But the amazing thing to me was in the dining hall, the stuff that I used to call garbage, they called a compost. And they literally put all that garbage and they mix it up with a little sawdust. And over in a matter of months, it changes its composition and can be used as soil. And a lot of the grass out here right now is that garble stuff, compost. Isn't that interesting? But I think God is calling us to do that with our garbage. And we have to get it sorted out. And the first you have to do is lay everything out there. And the journal is a place where you lay out all your garbage and stuff, you know. And then it's, at some point you can rearrange it and figure it out and how to reclassify. That's what I have found to be helpful or instructive for me. So as you're doing it, you're tempted to try to sort it while you're doing it. You know, don't worry about that. Just write it down. It doesn't have to make sense. And I also mentioned that we do maintain a lot of secrets from others and even from ourselves. And we are very good about maintaining secrets, stuff that we don't want to deal with. And that sometimes that's helpful because sometimes we just don't have the spiritual fortitude to deal with our garbage. But that takes us in another dimension. The point I want to emphasize before I move on to another area, because we don't ever have enough time to do it, and you never really finish, but you have to start somewhere, and then you have to stop somewhere. Then in your confessions, you have to be as specific as you can. You have to be as honest as you can. And you may not want to deal with it at that time, but at some process, some point in time, you may. I remember when I was in seminary, when I first went to seminary, I had picked up a lot of weight real quick, and within 6 months, I had picked up additional 50 pounds. All my life, I thought of myself as skinny. And that was my whole world. That was my self-perception. Until one day, I was walking into a classroom building, and the doorway, which was a mirror or a window pane, which served as a mirror, I saw a reflection of myself. And it was just disgusting. I just closed my eyes. I knew it was me, but yet I denied it was me. And after about 10 seconds or so, maybe not that long, I opened my eyes and it was still there. I was a fat Tyrone with a skinny mind, you know. And it's hard to deal with reality of yourself. But the journal is a place where you really record who you are, and it's tough looking at yourself. And at that point in time, I didn't choose to do anything about my weight. But I had to acknowledge it, and at some point in time, I did something about it. So that's about all our stuff, you know. We may not choose to do something about it at that point, but to acknowledge it is the first step. And then at some point in time, we may choose to do something about it when we feel better equipped to do it. Now, we have a lot of garbage. Again, I say we deal with our garbage, not other people's garbage. And when you're sorting through things in your journal, you decide what is yours and what is not yours. You don't deal with your spouse's garbage or the kids' garbage or some other your neighbor's garbage. You just leave that alone. You have enough of your own. You really do. That was interesting. We went up there and we had to sort through this compost or the garbage and the garbage routine. And the person who was leading the team said, don't put too much. We had a little bin that you put the stuff in that you have to chop it up and put sawdust in. She said, don't put too much in there because it'll be too much to handle. So sometimes we just have to handle just a little bit. And we have enough garbage of our own rather than to try to get involved in trying to resolve the other people's stuff and our codependency. Life, I read this passage of scripture to you because I wanted to just reemphasize that all of God's creation is pregnant with possibilities of God speaking to us. I mean, when he was sowing the seeds are thrown virtually everywhere. If you can see that imagery in your mind. And I think life is constantly trying to reveal information to us as we journey. Even the rocks are trying to reveal information. The pottery, that was an interesting lecture that George gave in chapel a couple of nights ago if he was there, talking about their cells in the clay, which is very interesting. But all of life is alive, all of life is trying to reveal something to us because we journey not by ourselves, but we journey with family and friends, but we journey with all of God's creation. I'm sorry if I'm talking fast, but we got a lot of ground, and that's not what I want to talk about. I want to go to another area at this point. And what I want to talk about right now very briefly before we move to the aura part, the recreation, is to talk a little bit a transition before we move confessions to affirmations, and which will lead us into recreation. A lot of the garbage in our lives, we don't create ourselves, but it's just dumped upon us. I mean, we are victims of all sorts of things, of all sorts of bigotry, racisms, or just meanness, or sometimes the meanness is not intended, but it happens to us. Some of them, Walter Wink in his book, Unmasking the Power, said, what's most revealing about a society are things that we don't talk about. I find it to be very insightful. And there are a lot of things that we don't talk about, we keep as secrets. And alcoholism is one, and incest is another. As a pastor, I found these things to be major secrets in families, and yet those are the very things that can cause what I call spiritual constipation, garbage that's not processed. Yet those are opportunities if we are have the strength, whatever our garbage that is imposed upon us, there's an opportunity for us to figure it out and to put it in some type of order to grow from it in leaps and bounds, if you follow what I'm saying. I think all of life, even the pain, even the suffering, the living with cancer, the living with a broken heart, a divorce, or whatever, whatever that stuff that happens to us that we have not responsible for, also is an opportunity for us to grow. And it's not what happens to you, it's what you do what happens to you that counts. I can't emphasize that. I tell my kids that all of that. Well, life is not fair. Well, life is not fair. That's right. It's not fair. It's not fair. But don't sit around crying about what happens to you. But learn from it. It's not what happens to you. It's what you do with it. It's not the garbage that's dumped on you. But what do you do with the garbage that's dumped upon you that counts? And you have an opportunity. We all have an opportunity and a responsibility to do something about it. Adam, the first dysfunctional family was Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. I like that myth because what happens? Adam will not assume responsibility for his behavior. Eve will not accept responsibility for her behavior. He blamed, oh Lord, you know, this woman you brought me, she made me do this. And then he said, Lord, you know, that serpent, you know, that's a really sharp thing. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have done that. And if you're always complaining and blaming, you cannot assume the responsibility for your behavior. And we do a lot of that in our families. We complain and we blame others for our behavior. Cain and Abel, their schism was based upon petty jealousy, greed. But a lot of times that stuff is not, you know, we're not responsible for, but it's dumped upon us. And there are a lot of people where things just dumped upon them. Like, for example, prime example is Jesus. I mean, that wasn't his garbage. It was the garbage of creation, of the humanity that was dumped upon him. So what did he do with it? He did something just so profound that the whole creation benefited from it. And let me just, a journal is a private place, and so let me share something of my journey a little bit in terms of what do you do with it. I grew up, as I mentioned earlier, in Detroit, and pretty much in a segregated neighborhood, and later we moved to an integrated neighborhood. And I'm the oldest of seven children, pretty much it used to be in a twilight zone when I was in school. You know, you have kids who are daydreamers, and I was one of those daydreamers. I never sort of thought what was happening in classroom was as important as what my thoughts were about. And consequently, I missed a lot of lessons because I was somewhere else. Was identified with having some learning disabilities and was a poor reader, and I used to stammer and stuff like that. And I was in a class in the fourth grade, my fourth grade teacher, her name was Mrs. Stone. And she would ring her classroom on the basis of what she perceived to be their abilities to learn information, gather information. And you had all the smart kids here. And the first one in the row was the smartest in the class. And you would move back and roll all the way around, if you follow what I'm saying. And I was in the last row in the last seat. That was Tyrone. I was dumb Tyrone. But prior to Mrs. Stone dropping garbage on me, others had dropped garbage on me. You know how people can do it. They don't mean any malice, but they just still do it, particularly with kids with the teasing. And kids have freckles or pimples, and other kids would tease them or and you know, when you're growing up and you're a child or you're adolescent, you're very self-conscious about your physical self and etc. And I was teased for my big lips and as a child growing up. And so in that fourth grade classroom, I was in a daydream, and Mrs. Stone called upon me, and obviously I didn't know the answer because I wasn't paying attention. And she started scolding me in front of what I felt was all creation. I felt at that moment, and I thought all creation was looking at my big lips. Whatever your infirmity is, that's what you think all creation is see all the time. So as she was scolding me, I covered my mouth like this here. And she said, how dare you lick your tongue out at me? And then she came over to me and with all her might, she just smacked me in my face. And that was a very powerful imagery in the mind of a kid who was about 8 years old at the time. The reinforcement of garbage upon garbage. And I could have very well been gone a pathway of self-destruction. And that's why I say it's not what happens to you, it's what you do what happens to you that really counts. And even to this day, which is 40 years later, I'm still trying to prove to Mrs. Stone that she was wrong. And I think a lot of things happen to us when we're younger or even older, that we can turn that around into a positive, if you follow what I'm saying. Any of you familiar with this entrepreneur out there by the name of Tony Robbins? He connected up with Fran Tarkenton, and I think you all probably know who Fran Tarkenton is, a retired football player for the Minnesota Vikings, and now he's doing other things like making money. and he hooked up with this guy by the name of Tony Robbins, and Tony Robbins came with this book, Unlimited Power, the mind having unlimited powers. And although he wasn't the originator, a lot of people had this in process before he made use of it, what he called NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Mm-hmm. And basically, have you ever heard of NLP? Any of you heard of NLP? Basically, neuro having to do with the nervous system. Linguistic having to do with communication, self-communication. And programming, any of you involved in computers, you know how you can program. We're like computers, you know. And we have a nervous system, and we have the self-talk. So you have to be aware, what are you saying to yourself all the time about yourself? What are you saying about yourself? How do you feel about yourself? What are you doing with the Mrs. Stone stories? And we all have Mrs. Stone stories. Something has happened to us more than once. And so the question is, are you using it in a positive, constructive way? Are you using your stumbling blocks as stepping stones? Or are they just continue to be stumbling blocks? So what you do is in your mind, you process or you reprocess or you relive that, and you go back, and I see myself saying to Mrs. Stone, see, Mrs. Stone, I'm a college president. I proved to you that you were wrong about me. So you can take what happens to you and turn it around in a very constructive and positive way. And again, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it that really counts. But I want to move on to and get to recreation, because I think that's part that's a part of maintaining a journal that some have difficulty in doing, because they say, well, how do you record stuff like that? Recreation. Remember when in Matthew, when Jesus at the very beginning of his ministry is baptized by John and hears his voice from heaven saying, you are my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. What a powerful affirmation to get, to hear God call you by name. That's another part. I mean, when you know that you are identified by God as something precious and something unique and something beautiful, you write that down. However you do it, I mean, you just do that. But after having that affirmation from God, Jesus went off into the wilderness. That was the very beginning of Jesus' ministry. Imagine, if you will, a pastor being called to a church and negotiating the package and et cetera, you know, in terms of the pension and the salary and vacation time and study leave and all that sort of thing, and saying, well, I want to take the first 40 days off. I see the going into the wilderness as a time of recreation. Others may interpret it as a time of testing, but yeah, we're always tested. But that was a time when Jesus had to get away and be away from all the clutter to process what, and to lay out what his life was going to be all about and how he was going to do that. After he was affirmed by God, he had to go away and figure out what he was going to do. We all need to, at some point, have points of recreation space. Particularly, I've experienced this with mothers as a pastor. They just feel like, well, you know, I got all these children, I got this husband, and I just don't have any time for myself. I remember a mother coming to me, and she said, sometimes I just feel I just wanted to leave. And I said to her, why don't you do that? Oh, I couldn't do that. I said, yes, you can if you choose to. We're not telling you to leave forever, but leave for a day or half a day or a week or go on a vacation, go on a cruise with some friends, just to renew yourself, to restore yourself, because we come to places like Holden. We retreat to places like Holden to be renewed, to go back to the very things we're getting away from, right? That's the whole point. It's recreation. So recreation is very much a part of I think, a life process, and those things are the things that we should identify. I have identified a number of recreation sort of things, and they fall into various categories in terms of recreation. One of those things is play. And we knew how to play so well at one point, and then at some points we just sort of forget, and we need to be reminded how to play. Since being here, I've seen the animals play. I've seen the does playing with each other right out here in the line. You see little chipmunks playing with each other. A person in my last group last week said they actually saw birds playing tag. I said, I never even heard of anything like that. And he said, well, we did. He and his white wife was there to verify it. And the birds that were chasing, they had one bird had a leaf, and others would chase it and to try to get the leaf. And then another would take the leaf, and then all the birds would try to chase that bird. And this went on for a long period of time. Play is a necessary part of the process of our journey in life. And you think about it, we learn so many skills just through play. You test yourself, you build your stamina, et cetera, in terms of the animal world. But think about a time when you were playing as a child, and particularly playing with a parent, and the bonding that took place there as a result of that playing together. I think about your family right now, your current family, and the times you play together. In play, you build intimacy. I'm going to get to extrasensory at 2 o'clock, but you're welcome to stay. They had it mixed up on the billboard. Play is very important in terms of our recreation and building intimacy. It's important to identify those times of play and to record them. Some of the most significant times of growth I've had with my children have been identified as playtime. Times with my spouse, and all those things you write down. The recreation are also part of the affirmation part, you know. And we're tempted to record just the garbage, the confessions and all the complaints and all the trials and the tribulations. It's so important to record affirmation. It's also so important to record recreation. Because what we learn, those things are very instructive for us, for our own spiritual growth. And it takes sometimes I think more work to write down the positive stuff. I had a little background in sociology in college. I majored in sociology, so I'm always interested in relationships of people with other people. And it's been said that in a giving family around a dining room table during the course of a meal, that for every 15 negative comments made about an individual, they hear one positive. Now you think about your family, and you think about the time you sit around and the time you engage in conversation. If you can classify them as negatives and positives in terms of your comments to one another, how they come out. Maybe not 15 to 1, but I think many of us are guilty of saying more of the negative than the positive. And particularly for the children, small children, it's far more important to accentuate the positive. And even us big people need affirmation. We need hugs. And when someone is coming to you, affirming you, don't say, oh, shucks. Accept it. Say thank you. Even write it down. You know, give flowers to the living. It's so important to affirm people.